We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Christopher, let's go. Hour four of the program. My name is Lawrence Holmes, here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. We've had Lance Briggs on the show. Anthony Heron was here. He did an hour with me. We talked a lot of football. We had Bruce Levine on talking some baseball. And I want to do something a little bit different. I've had the pleasure over the last few months to be included in the Sports Reporters podcast. Like they reached out to me a few months ago and said, hey, would you like to sit in for Mitch this week? Or would you like to sit in for Lupica this week? And I'm like, yeah, I've only been watching that show since I was young. So, yes, I would very much like to talk sports with those guys and Bob Ryan when given the opportunity to do so. So when I saw that Mitch Albom was out doing some press for his new book, The Next Person That You Meet in Heaven, I said, oh, well, this will be easy. I'm going to call Mitch and get him on the show, and we're going to talk. And I'm excited to have him on the show and talk with him about a whole bunch of things. A lot of them are related to sports, and I'm sure some of them aren't. So, Mitch, I appreciate you joining me. I want to start off here. You've done so much stuff in your career, whether it's be a reporter, it's be on television, it's being a musician, being a philanthropist. Where would you say, and of course writing books, where would you say right now what you are? Like, what are you if you have to define yourself by all the jobs that you had?
Storyteller. That's how I always have. I've gotten that question before because I have dabbled in a lot of stuff. But really at the heart of it, I just tell stories. I tell stories in a sports column. I tell stories in books. I tell stories on the radio. I just look at life and see, is there some way to craft a story out of it? And I've kind of done that. It's about the only thing I have any ability at. Honestly, I'm really bad at almost everything else. But I've always been able to tell a story, and that's how I've kind of gone through life.
When did you realize that you had the ability to tell a story in book form? Because it's a different discipline from game stories or columns.
That's a really good question. My first book was a sports book with Bo Schembechler. And that was a challenge in and of itself because I had to write his autobiography and I had to talk to 100 different people because he couldn't remember anything. And so in and of itself, that was an education about how to write a nonfiction book, you know, through research. But that was kind of, you know, you start when he's a boy, you go all the way up to, you know, when he's a grown man and a coach. It kind of followed a pretty easy line. Then I wrote a book about the Fab Five, and while that was still nonfiction, that was more of a story. You know, I started with these kids all over the map and these five African-American kids coming to the University of Michigan as freshmen and kind of turning the college basketball world on its ear. And that, you know, I flexed my writing muscles a little bit and was able to craft more of a story in a book. And then I left the sports world altogether with something that I really didn't think anybody was going to read, a book called Tuesdays with Maury. And that was probably really the first time that I had to tell a story from whole cloth, because with the Fab Five, with Bo, you had famous people involved. So you knew to a certain degree there was going to be this interest in those stories as books because they're famous. But nobody knew who Maury Schwartz was. He had been on Nightline talking to Ted Koppel about what it was like to die from Lou Gehrig's disease. But nobody knew him the way I knew him as my old college professor. And there was this challenge of how do I make a guy who, you know, isn't famous, isn't sports, isn't everything, how is he going to be interesting to people? And I learned from that book that if someone is interesting to you and you're learning something from your experience that has some universal overtones to it, people will be interested. It doesn't, you know, you don't have to be writing about Bruno Mars or, you know, Elvis Presley in order to get anybody's attention.
So once you make that decision to write the book and you figure out the process that goes into writing a book, did you want to take on the challenge again? Or did you say, you know, maybe I'll put this down for a little while and just focus in on Michigan versus Michigan State?
Well, that's an interesting question. You're more right than wrong. Tuesdays with Maury was this total sidetrack thing that I did to pay Maury's medical bills. I wasn't trying to become a different writer. I only wrote that book because Maury was in debt for his medical bills, and there was no other way I could think of to raise the kind of money he needed to pay those bills. And when it first came out, it was a tiny little book. I had given all the money to Maury. I wasn't aspiring to write books like that anymore. In fact, I remember asking my literary agent if he thought that this book would hurt my sports writing career, that I would be viewed as like a softy, you know, or Mr. Sensitive, you know, because I wrote this non-sports book about a dying professor. And I was fully prepared to kind of go back to just full-time sports writing, and if there was another book in sports to come out of it, maybe, but, you know, we'll see. And then Tuesdays with Maury became something that I never could have imagined for reasons that I still don't quite understand. I mean, but people just gravitated to that book, and it went from a 20,000-copy run, which was they figured they'd never sell all those, you know, 20,000 for the whole world, to I couldn't even tell you how many books it's sold now. I know it's somewhere in the neighborhood of 18 million or something like that. So that changes your life, Lawrence. I mean, your focus becomes totally different. What people want to talk to you about becomes different. Everybody who stops you on the street changes. They're not talking about sports anymore. They want to talk about, you know, their brother who died from cancer, and they read your book together. And when you're exposed to that much sadness and loss and real-life stuff, sports starts to seem kind of trivial in terms of, like, if you're going to spend a year or two working on a book. And so the next book that I wrote after Tuesdays with Maury took me 6 years to come up with the courage to write a follow-up to it, because, you know, everyone was expecting Wednesdays with Maury or something. And that's when I got into fiction and wrote my first novel, because it was out of fear that I couldn't live up to the expectations of a nonfiction book after Tuesdays with Maury. So I wrote The Five People You Meet in Heaven almost as a retreat. And that led me to a whole other, you know, part of life, which has culminated in this new book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven, 15 years later.
Mitch Albom is my guest. The name of his new book is The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. It's going to be a New York Times bestseller for a long time. It is the sequel to The Five People That You Meet in Heaven. Was there any trepidation at all of dipping back into this story and this success? Because there are some people who love a good sequel and there are some people who hate it.
Yeah. Well, I've never written a sequel before, so I didn't have any experience with it. It was 15 years old, and it was mostly out of readers' sort of request to find out what happened to the main character of the first book. His name was Eddie. He was an old maintenance man at an amusement park who felt that his life was nothing and nobody. He had fought in the war when he was younger, and he just said he didn't do anything the rest of his life. And when he's 83 years old, he dies saving a little girl from an accident. At the amusement park, a cart is falling, and he goes to push her out of the way at the last second, and he feels her little hands in his, and then, boom, everything goes black. And he wakes up in the afterlife, and he finds out that the first stage of heaven is that you meet five people from your life, some of whom you might know very well, some of whom might be total strangers to you, and they explain something you did or something they did to you that changed you forever and them forever. And by the end, he finds out that this life that he thought he led that was nothing was actually very significant. But there were a lot of open-ended questions about that book after it came out that readers, once it became very popular, readers started to ask me year after year, what's the second stage of heaven? You know, you said it was the first stage. You can't just leave Eddie there. Then what happens to him, you know? And then what happened to the little girl that he saved? You know, the last we heard of her was he pushed her out of the way, but we don't know anything about her. So after 15 years of that, and after suffering some losses in my own personal life in the last couple of years, which was really the motivation to do it, I decided I would revisit that world of heaven and do what comes, show what comes next. And I really didn't worry about, you know, whether people thought it was a good idea or a bad idea. I knew there were enough people out there that were curious. But, Lawrence, the truth is, if you write a good book, people will read it. And if you write a bad book, they'll tell you it's a bad book. It doesn't really matter if it's a sequel or not.
How do you feel like you've been changed by becoming an author? And what are the differences from the way that Mitch Albom, the author, is treated versus Mitch Albom, the sports writer?
Oh, that's easy. I'll give you the best example because I noticed it right away. For the first 13, 14, 15 years of my sports writing, once I was on television, on ESPN, and on the sports reporters, so now your face becomes a recognizable thing. And I would go through airports, and people would spot me, and they'd always have a question, you know, like a quick sports question. So they'd say, hey, Mitch, who's going to win the Super Bowl? And you'd say, hey, Patriots, you know, you keep going. You know, you'd be on one of those moving walkways or whatever. Hey, Patriots, you know, and that's it. Then after Tuesdays with Maury, people started recognizing me, but they all wanted to say, hey, I read that book, and, you know, my mother had ALS, you know, can we talk about it? And now you can't go, hey, Patriots, you know, and keep going. You have to stop, and you have to listen, and you have to empathize. And, Lawrence, it's not an exaggeration to say that that happens to me at least once a day. And depending on where I am, if I'm out at a book signing or something like that, 50 to 60 times, I will hear people's sorrows, losses, stories that parallel Tuesdays with Maury or other books that I have written. And how it changes you is you become sensitized to all the sadness and the losses that people walk around with their lives. I remember before I wrote Tuesdays with Maury, sitting in like Michigan Stadium, there's 103,000 people around. And all I thought about those 103,000 was, how am I going to get through all these people to get down to the visitor's locker room or the, you know, the home locker room? Because you got to, like, walk through them. And that's the way I looked at that crowd. After Tuesdays with Maury and the five people we meet in heaven and books like that, I would look out at that crowd when I'd be at a football game, and my mind would start saying, man, there's 103,000 sad stories out there. Like, if I stopped and started going through every row, hey, just tell me about somebody who you lost. Tell me about somebody who's sick right now in your life. Tell me about something you've been thinking about dying or what your meaning of your life is right now. Every one of them would have a story. And so that's the difference. You know, you just have your eyes open to what's really going on in people's hearts.
Is that hard on you? Because that's a lot to take on, where you're taking on a lot of people's hardships and their feelings, and clearly you're empathetic. So how does that affect you?
Well, Amy Tan, the writer of the Joy Luck Club, I sent her an early copy of Tuesdays with Maury because I didn't know how to write a book like that, and she clearly did. And I said, what do you think of this? You know, is this any good? And I remember she called me up and she said, okay, I'm going to tell you two things. One, this is a really good book and people are going to like it. And two, you're about to become everybody's rabbi. And I had no idea what she meant when she said that, and now I totally understand what she meant. And yeah, it can get heavy, you know, in terms of hearing a lot of those stories at one time. But you also have to step up to it. You know, given a choice, Lawrence, between spending the rest of my life in 4-minute conversations about the Rams defense or the Dodgers pitching staff or you know, or hearing about how somebody lost a child like we did and you know, how do you ever get over that, whatever. As sad as the latter one is, I'd rather take it and do it. Because at the end when you're done or you see somebody takes your hand and shakes it, you know, maybe with tears in their eyes and says thank you, you feel like you've done something human. Whereas after a sports discussion, you remember that, what is it, it's a Bud Light commercial or a Buffalo Wild Wings commercial where this guy, these two guys are going crazy at the table and then the wife comes over and says, who was that? He goes, I don't know. Because you could have that discussion with anybody. With, you know, so you feel like you're making more of a personal impression, I guess, having these discussions, even if it is heavy.
My guest for a few more minutes is Mitch Albom. He's the author of the book, The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. You can get it everywhere where you get books, whether it's brick and mortar or you want to order it online. It's the sequel to The Five People That You Meet in Heaven. Mitch, how has Haiti changed you?
Oh, man. Probably in every way possible. I went to Haiti in 2010 right after the earthquake. Couple weeks after the earthquake, got involved with an orphanage there just by accident, and started bringing guys from Detroit who I knew who were carpenters and roofers and plumbers and electricians down with me to rebuild this place. And we built the first toilets, literally, that they ever had, first shower they ever had, first kitchens, first school. And after a few months, I ended up taking over the operations of it and have been operating it ever since. And I go there every month. I have gone every month since 2010. And I have admitted 40-some-odd kids. We have 47 total kids there. And they're my family. They're my children, essentially. And for somebody at my age to suddenly have that big a family, it changes you totally. And not only do I love every one of those kids, and I'm there every month with them, and my goal is to get them, you know, fed, educated, to college, and then back to their country to stop the cycle of poverty and neglect that brought them to us. But in many cases, it becomes more personal than that. One of which is one of the kids, a 5-year-old girl named Chica, developed a cancerous brain tumor at that age, and we brought her up here, and we basically adopted her as our daughter, and she ended up living for 2 more years. She was supposed to die after 4 months, according to the doctors, but for 2 years she battled it with us as we traveled around the world trying to save her. And anyone who has a child who's listening to this knows that, you know, when you battle to save a child's life and you ultimately lose that battle, you're never the same. You can't be the same. And I will never be the same. And she has affected me, and the love that we felt from her and the blessing that we had to have her in our 50s as a little child in our lives again, that was a gift, but it was also the most heartbreaking thing we've ever had to go through. And so children will always change you, Lawrence, but poor children who have been abandoned or left behind, in some cases some of our kids were left to die, you know, when they were infants in the woods, and you look at them now and they're thriving and they're happy, and you see, how could anybody leave this child to die? And it just gives you an idea. It just gives you a view of the world and what you need to do in the world. And I know that I need to help children. I think I was put on this earth partly to do that. And that's what I do with those kids.
There also seems to be some joy, too, which is great. I saw the Instagram post. You did a little Disney on Ice.
Yeah. Well, we have another little girl who's up with us. Babu is her name. And thankfully, she's got some medical issues, but they all turned out well. And now she just got a couple more exams, and then I'll take her back. So for her birthday, I took her to Disney on Ice, which, yeah, on a Sunday morning when there were football games coming up, I was sitting there at Disney on Ice. Just shows the love that I have. I wanted to say to her, you have no idea what this kind of sacrifice this really is, but, you know, she loved it, and, you know, when a kid smiles, it makes up for a lot of absent football games.
It also shows how you've changed, what your priorities become are completely different. The last thing I want to ask you about this, and again, the name of the book is The Next Person That You Meet in Heaven. We're talking with Mitch Albom. Would it be fair? I have made this connection that your interaction with the city of Detroit, a city that is constantly fighting for relevance, fighting for its life, essentially as a city, your interaction with people there, your experience in Detroit, would it be fair to connect that to why you feel like you need to reach out in places like Haiti, or why you want to try and help children?
Well, I would say it all comes from sort of an empathy for underdogs and people who have to struggle. I've been in Detroit 30-plus years here now, 33 years. It's my home, and I identify with an underdog. You know, I lived in New York when I was younger, could have stayed there, have had opportunities to go to L.A., turned them down. For whatever reason, I'm more comfortable in a blue-collar environment. Yeah, Detroit had the crap kicked out of it on a national scale, and we were kind of left to die in the mid-2000s there when our city was bankrupt and everyone was against the auto industry. And, you know, you sort of rally together when you're like that. Detroiters are like that, and I have a lot of charities I operate here in Detroit. We have a daycare center. We have the nation's first medical clinic for homeless children. We operate a rec center for kids after school at Matthew Stafford, of all people, built a football field in the most dangerous neighborhood in the United States of America. He's got this beautiful football field, and the kids play there, and it's they learn, and they spend an hour with tutors every day, one-on-one, before they can touch a football or basketball. It's all part of trying to make the city better, and you know, whether that leads to Haiti or Haiti leads to that or whatever, it's all connected. I think I'm one of those people, Lawrence. If I'm walking down the street and there's a person in front of me begging, you know, who's homeless, I always give them something because I figure, well, you know, God or fate must have put me on this street. And if they put me on another street and the guy wasn't there, would I walk a block over to find him? Probably not. But I'm on this block, and this is in front of me, and I can do something, so I should. And that's the way I feel about, you know, I was put in Detroit for some reason when I was young, and the city needs help and people who have high profiles to help it, so I should. And I went to Haiti I just went to Haiti on a fact-finding trip, basically, but there they were in front of me, and they needed help, and so I needed to help. I didn't pop over to the Dominican Republic or fly to Africa or go to other places where there could be help, but that was in front of me, and I just felt I needed to do it. And I guess that's been my approach. You know, if I find myself someplace and I look around and somebody needs help, I think we all have an obligation to do it if we can. And I was blessed to be able to do it, so I did.
Mitch, I really appreciate your time, and I thank you for including me on the Sports Reporters podcast occasionally.
Oh, you're great on it. You should be on it more often. You should have been on it when it was on television. You're a natural. We always say after we finish visiting with you on the Sports Reporters, get him back on again. Come on, book him again. So you're more than welcome, and it's probably the longest you and I have ever gone without throwing in a pass or a dunk or a score or analysis, so I appreciate that.
Well, I love to do that on my show. I like to talk about things that are connected to sports but not necessarily sports. And obviously with your success that you've had with Tuesdays with Maury and now the five people you meet in heaven and now this new book, I'm glad that we had the chance to talk on this level, and I'm really glad that the people in Chicago get the opportunity to hear you speak so passionately about the things you care about.
Pleasure to talk to you, Lawrence. I'll see you on the Sports Reporter.
You got it. Thanks a lot, Mitch.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That's Mitch Albom. His new book is called The Next Person You Meet in Heaven. I get to do the Sports Reporters with him and Bob Ryan occasionally. It is a lot of fun and a little bit of a history lesson for me, getting a chance to be on that show. And I grew up loving that show on television when, you know, you had John Saunders and Bill Roden would be on there, and you see guys that you want to try and emulate in the business, and you see what can happen when you allow yourself to branch out and do other things. And Mitch has done that as both an author and a playwright and a musician and everything else. So go get his book. If you've read The Five People That You Meet in Heaven, here's the sequel, The Next Person That You Meet in Heaven. Thanks to him. We'll be back after this on The Score. This hour of the show is being brought to you by Cars for Kids. Call 1-877-CARS with a K, the number 4-KIDS. And the bottom of the hour is being brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. If you don't have lunch plans tomorrow, you should go check out the Wolves. They are going to be playing a game against Cleveland at 11 a.m. That's just, you know, take your lunch break a little bit early, hang out, go see skates, go see the Wolves. Take your class. I mean, I know I'm asking a lot for you to pull that together and 12 hours or whatever, but you know, take your kids, pull them out of school, go see the Wolves tomorrow and enjoy rollback concessions and free parking presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Kia dealers. Thanks for the nice words about the Mitch Albom interview. I appreciate it. I mean, if you're a fan of this show, you know that I really do enjoy doing long form interviews,
and talking to people, because I just feel like there's a lot that can be gained out of some of the conversation that you end up having, which is part of the reason why, you know, I have the House of L podcast, so I can talk to people in Chicago media. And I wondered this week, I was kind of sitting there going, do I do the Mitch interview for House of L? Like, does it belong there or does it belong on The Score? And I talked with my PD, Mitch Rosen, no relation, about it. And he said, well, what do you feel? And, you know, Mitch is such a big person in sports. Even though we weren't necessarily talking about sports, I felt like it made sense to have the interview on the show instead of the podcast. So it was cool. I was glad that it's worked out. And, you know, someone pointed out on Twitter, like, I hope Terry didn't hear it, because I know that Terry and Mitch haven't always seen eye to eye. So it's definitely something that I thought about when the sports reporters came to me a few months ago and asked me to be on. I knew that, you know, one of the guys that I consider a mentor in this business wasn't too keen on Mitch. And so I had to kind of weigh whether or not I wanted to. Not that Terry even cares at this point. It's not like, you know, he's sitting around going, oh, I can't believe Lawrence put Mitch Albom on. Or maybe he is, but probably not. He's enjoying his life. You know what? Terry, I'm looking forward to I'm getting the particulars on this. But we talked about this when I had Terry Bors on the show when he was promoting his book last year, which you should go get, Score of a Lifetime. It's tremendous. Terry had said to me before he went to Florida that he wanted to do stand-up comedy. Not like as a profession. He just wanted to, like, one night do stand-up. So I'm hearing that Terry is going to do stand-up. Oh, thanks, Tony. So get this. Terry Bors is going to be at CD and Me on November 10th in Frankfurt. It's a charity event that will begin at 8 p.m. He's the first comic. Oh, my man Mike Toomey is going to be there. Oh, I love Mike. Mike's a good man. That's a good guy to learn from. So, yes, CD and Me out in Frankfurt, November 10th. If you've been missing Terry Bors, you're going to get him doing stand-up and making noises on November 10th at CD and Me. But back to the interview with Mitch Albom. I like when we can do that. I like when you give me the space to allow me to take you to someplace that's a little bit different than what we might do. I mean, basically for 3 hours, we were hardcore sports talk. Like, I mean, with how great Anthony Herron is at breaking stuff down, and then Lance Briggs with his expertise, and on top of that, Bruce, it's nice to occasionally branch out a little bit and do something that might be different. And the more you learn about Mitch, the more interesting he becomes. Having an orphanage in Haiti, the outreach that he's doing in Detroit, the fact that he's someone who would probably have preferred to have been a musician instead of being a writer. And he's found incredible success being a writer, and then realizing midway through his career that he wanted to write books and then do it. You know me, I like to dabble in a couple different areas. So when I see people who are doing more than what people expected they can do, I like to pay attention to how they're doing it, because I feel like there are things outside of my passion for sports that I can do. And so you watch how other people move and you try to tailor that to the way that you move and make things happen. But I'm glad that there are people who texted in or tweeted me and said that they got something out of the interview. I think that's really cool. And I think when you have a great interviewee, it makes things even easier. When people are willing to give and talk to you and tell you stuff, it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun. Like this past week on my podcast, House of L, I had Kelly Kroll, who, you know, has been on the show plenty of times talking Cubs, and now she's covering the Bulls. That that interview, man, you should check it out. It's a link is in my Twitter bio at Lawrence W. Holmes. I think it's one of the best ones in the series so far, to tell you the truth. Had a great time, and Kelly is just the realness. So, not Herb Lawrence. He is the realness, but you know what I mean. So, thanks for that. So, on the show tonight, we have had really good breakdowns of the Bears. And Tuesday's kind of the day. I'm actually really happy that today was the day that we had Lance. And I think that it sets up that way next week, too. I think next Tuesday we're also out and about with the Top Draft Show. Because in covering the NFL, you kind of learn that Tuesday is the day when you decide to move on from whatever that last game was. You start anew. Like, for example, they will start practicing tomorrow for the Jets. You get the film session on Monday night. On Tuesday, the players are off. And then Wednesday, they come back, and there'll be a new game plan put in, and they'll get ready for the Jets on Sunday over at Soldier Field. And it becomes another game where it's really important that you do well, because I checked the standings this morning because I thought I had seen it wrong at other places, because most places had the Bears in third place in the division. And I was going, is that right? Is that right? So I looked over to NFL.com, and I'm doing it again just so I'm sure about this. So the way that the league itself has the Bears, they have the Bears in last place. So it's the Vikings 4-2-1. It's the Packers at 3-2-1, and the Vikings, you know, have the better percentage, the better win percentage. Then the Lions at 3-3, and the Bears at 3-3, and the difference is that the Lions have a win in the division, and the Bears have a loss in the division. So we got a good breakdown of where the Bears are at, and we can kind of turn the page. I mean, don't get me wrong. We're going to talk about the Bears more. On tomorrow's show, we'll do it for sure, and unless there's some other things or some pressing things that come up. Can I just say, the Bulls, I watched the Bulls last night. Man, that excitement I had for the season started, it took about a week for that to go away. And now you got Chris Dunn hurt. He's going to be gone for 4 to 6 weeks, and you add that to Lauri Markkanen not being out there. And I will say, you know what we know about the Bulls? Zach LaVine can score. He can score. You're doing 30 a game to start the season off. You're doing something right.
Not excited about our guy Jabari last night in the first half?
Jabari balled out last night. He balled out. And I still think that him off the bench is the better move than him as a starter. I think that it allows him to play like he's got something to prove, and he's either going to get that option year or someone's going to sign him, and he'll be all good. But he definitely showed you he can score. But they can't defend as a team. And then they made some, like, mistakes. So, like, at the end of it, where they fought back in last night's game, and then Wendell Carter, I think they were down 5 with, like, 50 seconds left, and then he turns the ball over. And you're like, you fought all the way back from what looked like it was going to be a super embarrassing loss to that. And what about Doncic last night just doing the fake pass thing all the time? just like, fake pass, and then Wendell Carter falls for it. Nope, I still have the ball. It was some stuff like straight out of an and-one mixtape with Luka Doncic. Shout out to Adam Amin, by the way, who did play-by-play. There's going to be a bunch of guys that fill in for Neil Funk this year. I think it's 20 games that he's not going to call. And I think Adam Amin is one of the best young play-by-play guys in the country. And he's from Chicago, and he was ready last night. He was so ready. Him and Stacey King did a nice job working together. Stacey's going to be asked to do a lot of heavy lifting, because he's going to have so many different on-air partners, and he's still got to be Stacey. So it'll be fun to watch that. There's some good guys that are, from what I saw, that are on the list. What's this? What am I looking up here? So you got Andy Demetra. He's going to be doing the games in Atlanta. Kyle Draper has got some of the dates as well. They've got some really good broadcasters that are going to take over for Neil, which is cool. Really, really cool. All right, I'm going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to check in with Julie, who, if you're not following Julie on Instagram, at Julie DeCaro, a conversation that we had Friday during transition where we were picking out the levels of Matt Nagy on a scale of Star Wars heroes. And she put her list out there on Instagram. It's pretty funny. I'll talk to her about that and more next here on The Score. My teammate Julie DeCaro is going to be on the microphone until midnight tonight doing all sorts of crazy stuff. She is back at the Score Studios while I am at the EPI hanging out, Miller Lite Top Draft Show. What up, Jules?
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
So, saw your list.
Yeah, what'd you think?
Your Star Wars list. I thought it was pretty good.
Well, here's the thing. So people are already ragging at me online, like my friend Tom in Appleton. Tom. Here's the thing. We had to make a decision. Are we going at the top with force power, or are we going with coolness? Because if I was going with coolness, obviously Han Solo rockets right to the top. But we had to make a decision, and so this is what we came up with. Please respect the list.
I'm with you, and Han's down low, not low, but midway through my list, and it's fine. Like everyone thinks that they're Han Solo, and you're not.
No, there's only one Han Solo. He's like fifth on my list. I've got him ahead of some four people. Yeah. I also added, you know, some people in here like Little Greedo, Little Annie, Teen Annie, Little Greedo, you know. And then Jar Jar Binks is way down at the bottom. We also put Biggs and Porkins in here. That respectively is the guy that Luke hugs when he first gets to the Rebel base. And then the stay on target guy who doesn't ultimately stay on target.
Right.
So, I mean, this is what we came up with, and we may tweak it a little bit, but this is where it is right now.
Do you have Jar Jar ahead of Tressman, or... Because I had Tressman at the bottom of my list.
Yeah, I know. We decided to stay in the actual Star Wars universe, not the one that exists in your head. So, it ends with Jar Jar.
You can't tell me that Tressman didn't seem like a Star Wars character, though.
Tressman is like one. Oh, I didn't put the kids at the academy on there. They got to go under Little Annie.
Yeah.
Yeah, the younglings, they're under Teen Annie.
Man, that's a rough scene.
Well, it's a rough scene, and also great job teaching them how to use the Force, because there's like 15 of them, and they can't manage to do anything.
Yeah, but, you know, what are they supposed to do?
I mean, something.
They're like, there's nothing they can do.
They've had more formal training than Teen Annie.
That's true, but he was a... That's a rough scene. Like that's a brutal. Real easy way to get mad. Like you're sitting there and you're like, okay, here's the turn, and because there's a lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff leading up to his dark turn that you can go, okay, I can understand that. Like I might not have done what he did, but I can understand it. That's the one thing where you go, there's no reason for that. That's just pure evil. And now I hope someone pushes him out a window.
Well, they had to give us something like that, right? Because otherwise it's just teen angst. And then the whole thing is stupid. The whole thing falls apart. If it's just like you won't let me hang out with my girlfriend enough, then it's like, this is dumb now.
You got to stop telling me to go to school and not letting me hang out with my girlfriend.
Exactly.
Well, I don't want to practice the piano right now. I got a girlfriend.
Exactly.
She likes me.
Yes. So that's why they had to give us that. But other than that scene.
I'm influenced by this old guy, too.
Yeah, and other from that scene, we never really see scary Darth Vader until Rogue One, right? That scene right at the end. Otherwise, if you look back on it, if you just look at the three movies that we got when we were kids, the middle movies, it's sort of like, what's the big deal? I don't get it. He doesn't really do anything bad.
I like that you're taking this as far as it can go. That's what I like about it. So where was Nagy before Sunday, and where is he after?
Well, I can't tell you after. We're going to reveal on my show, Lawrence.
Okay, all right, that's fair.
Before, he was at Qui-Gon Jinn. So, like, thinks he has the ability to mold someone into a Jedi, but we're not really sure. So that puts him below Yoda, Obi-Wan, Leia, Luke, Han, Chewie, Rey, and then comes Qui-Gon Jinn. So he was, like, seventh.
I like how complete your list is. What else are you going to do on the show tonight?
Well, we are going to talk some Bears with J.J. Stankovic. It's my first chance to react to the loss. I'll tell you, I fell asleep for a while in the third quarter. That was how much hope I lost. It just sapped all my energy, and I fell asleep. But I woke up in time to see the almost miraculous pass at the end. So we'll do all that with J.J. Stankovic. And then coming up at 11 o'clock, Tony Andracki's going to be here to talk about a couple really interesting pieces that have been out there lately about the Cubs, one of which he wrote on Daniel Murphy. And we're also going to basically say bad things about Tony Gill, who went to go see A Star Is Born per our agreement, but then refused to come on the show tonight to talk about it and is making everyone wait for his review until Friday.
What's that about? Well, Tony's here, so I'm going to get some answers from him right now. All right, so Tony, I saw that you went to go see A Star Is Born.
I did.
Why aren't you going on Julie's show tonight to talk about it? Because she paid for the movie and popcorn.
She did, but I'm here, though.
Oh, you're saying because you're on remote. If you were back at the studio, it would be easy.
Yeah, definitely. I don't trust my phone at this point in time. So, yeah, I want it to be good, Julie. I want to be in studio. I want to have the imaging and everything all set up for you. So Friday.
All right, I'm just saying, by Friday, this thing may have run its course.
I don't think so, Jules. I think that people are interested in why you had poor Tony go see A Star Is Born.
I gave her my notes, so he can give you a little tease on where my head was at different points in the movie.
And he did. He was all over social media letting people know that he was going to go see A Star Is Born.
I saw it. I was sitting on my bed just cackling looking at his Instagram feed. And he looked so upset when he came out, too. So I'm excited to find out if he was upset because of the content of the movie or if he was upset just about the movie itself.
I've got some theories, but I'm not going to share on what those are. Jules, I'm looking forward to listening to your show on my way home. I appreciate you.
Thanks, man.
And I'll see you soon. That's Julie DeCaro. She's coming up next from 10 until midnight. Check her show out. My man J.J. Stankovic is going to be on the show. J.J. knows his Bears, so you should definitely listen up. The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Lunch plans tomorrow. The Chicago Wolves will host a rare matinee game tomorrow at 11 a.m. at Allstate Arena versus Cleveland. Enjoy rollback concessions and free parking presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Kia dealers. Thanks to everyone here at the Edison Park Inn for inviting us out. We do appreciate that. Thanks to our engineer, Ray. He did a great job. Thanks to Herb Lawrence, Christopher Dickens, who produced the show back at the ranch. My man, Tony Gill, who went to go see A Star Is Born and doesn't want to talk about it now.
It's a trap.
Score Promotions, we appreciate them being out here, too. Thanks to Miller Lite for bringing us out. Lance Briggs, Anthony Heron, Bruce Levine, Mitch Album. It was a pretty money show tonight. I'll shout out to the White Sox, too. My homie, Sheena Quinn, her sister, they were out here with the baby, hanging out, doing White Sox type things and showing love. So much love to them and the White Sox for coming through, coming all the way to the Northwest side to represent. All right, I'm going back to Hyde Park now. I'm tired. I'll be back on tomorrow at 6 o'clock. Thanks for listening.
Bye-bye.
Oh, you tripping. I'm out of here anyway. Peace out.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.